All right, theory and theology. So my next segment here talking about Freemasonry. Let me see. Sorry, my throat is kind of dry or something. Got a weird little cough. So I'm gonna need to drink water in between. But I'm gonna talk about some things I forgot to mention last time that I learned a little bit more about, and then just kind of the direction, the kind of turns of some things I've kind of clarified with, like, rituals and you know, early entry, and some of the things that come up about the potential of some kind of cult related activity from one guy's perspective that I was not surprised at what he said, because of myself being raised Christian, I can see how he would come to those conclusions. But I do want to talk about it and see, kind of on the surface, if I really believe it or not, and maybe a little in depth to that. So the parts that I wanted to clarify, I guess there was a history that that black people couldn't join. That does not seem to be an issue with race these days. There was a history that women couldn't join. That doesn't seem to be an issue with females. And it doesn't say anything about LGBTQ plus people not being allowed to participate necessarily, according to ChatGPT. Okay, so I could be wrong. So there's a girls group called Job's Daughters. I think, I'm blanking on the starting age. I want to say 12 to 20, but I don't know if that's accurate. They have something called pageants that they're going to change the name into competitions, but there's a lot of pageantry language. It doesn't have anything to do with beauty pageants. It's competitions, kind of about oral speaking, some kind of planning that they have to do. I don't know exactly if community service is tied into this, as part of certain rituals and competitions and things. But it seems like they're very geared towards leadership and public speaking. That seems to be one of the main things. It reminds me of, I'd say, for the men's groups, women's groups, boys, girls groups, or youth, male or female groups. It seems to me overall that their main purpose on, like, the most basic level is to help people become better with seeking leadership positions, moving up in positions, and having confidence and being good with public speaking, memory, talking to all sorts of people with confidence and respect. And almost, dare I say this, almost without the I don't know what I'm trying to say. Let me explain what I'm trying to say. You know how a lot of times when you talk to people, it's very rare that you'll talk to anybody that doesn't have any kind of in like inflection that sounds either maybe too too direct or too like sharp or too sarcastic or too irritated with others. You know, like, I think a lot of us are unfortunately used to being around that certain person that you don't really enjoy being around because they've got, like, too much in the negative direction, like, when you're interacting with them socially. And then there's kind of the majority of people that are kind of on average where they might say something every now and then that kind of rubs you the wrong way. But it's not, like, so much that you're not going to talk to them. These are, like, your day-to-day people. And then there are people that are just, like, better at that kind of stuff. At not really becoming too passionate when they speak or too aggressive when they speak or too overpowering or too, you know, withdrawn or interrupting when you're talking, or, you know, they just don't do those things. It's very rare that you find people like that, but from the majority of the people that I've seen talking, I feel like they tend to have those qualities where they're not really pissing people off. They're pretty good. Like, there's nothing that they, not nothing, but they don't tend to say things in a way that's like, if you were already in a bad mood, you just wouldn't want to hear it. You know, they're not like overly sarcastic. They're kind of like, even when they are like, you know, playing around or like joking with each other, it's not in like a harmful way. It's more like a joke that's like very, very light joking, not like, I think we all know somebody who, like, their jokes are a little bit too personal and hurtful. Or they're a little too aggressive or something, you know. It doesn't seem like, just from my early glances, so I could be wrong, but it doesn't seem like they have that turn-off factor, I guess. I'll put it in another way real quickly. I'm often reviewing different types of religions, different types of theories, different types of thoughts, thinking, psychologies. And a lot of times I'm learning from lectures or people talking or just people who are part of whatever group it is. When people get too preachy or too much emotionally minded in a way that is trying to more so prove their point without looking at other people's views, I think that's a big turnoff to a lot of people. I'll use an example. I'm not picking on anybody, but use an example of Christians and Muslims. Way back, I don't know how I got to go to this, but there was some kind of group that was like, one of my friends, I think at Cal State Long Beach, was part of, like, some kind of Christian religious group. He invited us once to this, like, all-day prayer. And I stayed with some other friends. What we felt like was maybe 4 hours. It was probably not even 2 hours. But the friend that invited us, he stayed a really long time. I think he stayed all day. And I think this event that I wanted to talk about was connected to that series of events that like Christian group on campus was doing. And so there was like an auditorium on campus, like a smaller, well, it was just like a classroom, like the auditorium style classrooms. And it's probably about as big as like a movie theater. And there was kind of a stage and some tables and a panel discussion. There were Muslims on one side, Christians on one side. And it was supposed to be like teaching one group, like the Christians teach about their religion and the Muslims teach about their religion, and there's basically Christians and Muslims sitting in the seats listening, and it was just, okay, you know, we want to learn about this religion. But I don't know how they chose who went first at the tables up front talking to the audience, which was us. But let's just say they left it up to the two up front, maybe, and then somebody decided the Christian guy is going to go first. And he starts his discussion. I don't know exactly where he started. This was like over 10 years ago. But basically, let's just say he starts, from what I recall, he just seemed to start early on just saying, like, this is why I think Christians are more right than Muslims, because the Bible says this, and Muslims do this, and it's wrong, and Christians do this, and it's right, because, and here's this Bible verse, and here's this Bible verse, and then here's some other Bible verses that are kind of opposing to views of why most Christians would believe in Islam. Now, he wasn't really explaining what Christianity was. He wasn't teaching about, okay, this is what a typical Christian's week might look like or whatever. And the Muslim guy, when it was his turn to speak, he was just like, okay, we were not expecting an argument, you know, or like a debate. They weren't prepared to have some kind of debate. From their understanding, it was an educational conversation. And all I really remember is the guy saying, like, whatever, there's some kind of, like, chant or some kind of phrase that people say, like, in Arabic, and then the reply is, Allahu Akbar. But I don't remember what he said. It sounded like something like Afdi or something like that, but I really don't know. I've never understood that first term that people say sometimes. And so he said that, and then, like, the whole almost one side of the room said, Allahu Akbar. And then he explained that, you know, they're not doing some kind of, like, aggressive thing. It just means that Allah is God, or God is one, or something like that. And somewhere else during the conversation, when the Muslim guy was still speaking, I don't even really remember what he was calm, and I don't think he was like talking down about Christianity. I think he stayed to the topic and just talked about Islam and like what it is and what people practice, what they do. And then he said a couple times, he said that phrase like two or three or four times, and the whole other side of the room, every time he said it, they're like, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, like, kind of like shouting, but it wasn't aggressive. I didn't feel threatened. I don't think anybody felt threatened. I don't know, maybe they did. I didn't, because I was like, it wasn't like people were like throwing things or like standing up, jumping around and like running or anything. Like, everyone was kind of like seated, you know, so I was like, well, I don't think anybody's gonna try to do anything. Like, they're sitting all the way, you know, they're just whatever. And the guy explained what that chant meant in the first place, and so when they did it the next times, I wasn't like, you know, shocked or surprised. I mean, I'd never been in a room where that had happened before. So for some reason that kind of stands out to me, but I just remember, let me come full circle because I'm going way off topic, but I mean, I'm mentioning all that because I just remember specifically in that experience at, you know, I was like pretty hardcore practicing Christian. Like you can tell by the types of activities I was doing, you know, just for fun. Like this was what I did for fun. I went to prayer things and, you know, religious things on my other friends' campuses and my campuses or whatever. And, you know, I'm not like bragging about it. I'm just saying that was part of my lifestyle. Just like, you know, if you're into basketball, you're playing basketball. If you're into, you know, like exercising, you're going to exercise during college. Like if you're, whatever you're into, you're probably going to be doing that, especially during college, because it offers a lot of opportunities to do different stuff usually. And so I was really into Christianity, so I was connected with other Christians, and they would always have events, and I would just pick and choose what kind of event I wanted to go to if they invited me, and I went, and I took the classes I could that had to do about religion or the Bible, even in, you know, public colleges and stuff. Like they would have philosophy classes, like whatever, you know. But this guy, you know, that was preaching, you know, the Christian guy, he was kind of like at this panel discussion where we were in the audience, like he was kind of a, his energy was kind of a turnoff. Like even being like, the reason why I was mentioning, like I was raised Christian, doing all these Christian things, events, like participating in all kinds of stuff related to Christianity, and I wasn't even like wanting to hear what this guy was saying. Like if that was my first introduction to Christianity, I probably would have been like, oh, like that didn't feel good. Just like, you know, studying Freemasonry, if my first introduction had felt like that, that kind of energy that guy was giving off, I would have been like, oh man, that was intense. I don't really think I want to have anything to do with these people or anybody who is like that, or I'm going to be careful, you know, like I wouldn't be so open around that type of energy. And I kind of feel like the Muslim people who were speaking, it just felt humble and kind and, you know, authentic, without like too much ego. And that was just like one experience. But taking it full circle into like just kind of what I'm kind of realizing about hearing people who are involved in Freemasonry, like hearing them speak and talk about whatever it is that they're talking about, explaining, you know, Freemasonry and stuff, they're very well spoken. And I think the most important thing is that the way I'm hearing them speak and the energy that's coming with it is not yet a turnoff. It's not yet a turnoff. And that's, I think that's very difficult to find when you're researching like any kind of belief system. It's hard not to come across people who are just like, it's hard to find people that aren't too aggressive or too, like a turnoff, basically. Like for me, it's easy, you know, to get turned off to learning about things when I first engage with like some weird negative message, where I'm like, man, like this doesn't sound like something that is gonna be pleasant to study, you know. It's like, so yeah, that's the biggest thing that's standing out to me, is just kind of like the conversation skills. Okay. And did I talk about Job's Daughters? So Job's Daughters is a group of the females, the young females. I talked about them at the beginning. But they have different types of methods of things that they go through. I don't think it's exactly like the males, and I don't think I've heard from what I've read so far, that there's that women can join a women's only group or like an intergender, like a multigender, I don't know what you call it, a multigender group that's not just males only. And then there's males only groups. I don't know anything about how trans people or non-binary people are initiated or allowed. I don't really know. Hasn't come up yet. All I know is that they're not, like, banned from joining. And so I would assume if they're not banned from joining, there's got to be a method of how they're going to choose. What that method is, I may never know. So yeah. So those are some things that I've newly learned since the last time. And I do believe that, you know, people call it a fraternity, not a religion. I still don't know. I still don't know if I think it's a religion or not. I think it is, but people would say it's not. I mean, they do have beliefs in all other. So, okay, they said that on their altar, which is like a big, I guess for lack of a better explanation, a big table up front. It looks like a table of some kind. Just larger than most square looking tables. He was explaining they have a King James Bible. So there's this King James Bible that has this Freemason symbol that I don't know how similar that is to other Bibles. I don't know anything about it. I just noticed that somebody was kind of concerned about that Bible. Someone who is not a fan of Freemasonry was concerned about that Bible. I don't know more than that. I just know that it did raise some concerns that maybe it's got some added or removed information. Some of the footage that I saw where a guy snuck in with a hidden camera at one of the rituals where someone kind of, it's a ritual where they fake, I guess, attack or kill. They fake this. They fake attack and fake the death of, it almost sounds like a play, like almost like they're reading a script, like people have roles and it's all happening in that room or the temple or whatever they call it. And, you know, the guy falls back in the sheet. And then there's all these things like prayers and things that are read, and they do this like handshake, these different handshakes, and within part of it they showed the Bible that was going to be read. And that Bible, somebody, the guy who snuck in, put like some pages up with some explanations of the handshakes and then the explanation of the Bible about like adding or removing information. But I don't know, this is the first time I've heard or seen that they even have a Bible. They also have the Gita, they have the Quran, they have the Torah, and they have, oh man, I'm blanking. Did I say them all? There's a Buddhist one, right? Did they say Buddhist? I guess they said, I think they said Buddhist. So yeah, there's Buddhist and Hindu. So that's something I wasn't aware of. I don't know if I even considered Buddhism, but I guess they consider Buddhism. But when I was thinking about it last time, I didn't even consider Buddhism. so let me see, after the females, after the, just my general impressions of approachability, like, it kind of draws you in to want to learn, because you're not easily turned off. I'm not easily turned off by it. I'm actually more intrigued. And even, like, usually, even if I would hear a bunch of Christian people saying, like, or people of, like, a religion, a biblical-based religion, saying, hey, don't go over there, hey, don't learn about that, definitely don't become one, but, like, don't even poke over there, I would have usually watched content and kind of seen where they were coming from, seen where those groups were coming from in saying don't learn about it, and I might have more caution or feel like, okay, I see where they're coming from, let me have more caution. Strangely, I'm not getting that red flag, and I don't know, usually that doesn't happen. Like, usually if it's like somebody saying, hey, like, this is some kind of direction that you don't want to go towards, usually I can kind of see the rationale and be like, okay, like, I kind of see where they're coming from, you know, I don't want to jump in too much, or I might stop jumping in altogether, but that takes me to my next thing. So I was watching this video, probably the last part of this topic, I was watching this video by, I'm gonna talk about that secret temple ritual, that was revealed by the Catholic guy with the hidden camera in the Masonic temple. There's this guy, Richard Lorenzo Jr. The video is called Secret Freemasonry Ritual Caught on Camera. And the thumbnail has a picture of him. It's white and green letters with a picture of him with his mouth open. He's got a beard, white shirt, and there's that compass with a G in it. And it shows, like, an arrow pointing to a guy kind of laying on the ground. And the ritual part, I watched it. The ritual part to me did not appear, like, super triggering. Like, it was, you know, not, I found it more triggering the videos that Richard Lorenzo Jr. said that he was casting some demon out of somebody, and the footage that he showed of him doing that to me was a little more triggering than this other secret ritual. It's very much like, the best I can explain it is like a play, like if you grew up Christian or something, that's the easiest thing for me to think of. If there was, like, a holiday, like, I mean, Easter's big at some churches. In the Adventist church, it's not a huge thing. But I'm trying to think of a holiday that might be kind of like, I don't know, this would probably not happen at a church, but let me make something up. Kind of like if they had a 4th of July, like, if you've gone to a church that's not super, like, traditional, you've probably had people do skits at your church where, like, they either go home and memorize something and all come back and do it as, like, a play, or, you know, you're reading from a sheet. Like, we used to do this during Easter. They'd have some kind of play, not like an Easter Bunny play, but, like, some kind of, like, reading, like, where there's, like, reader 1, reader 2, like, up to reader 8 or something like that. And, like, different people would be talking about different things. Like, maybe somebody takes Mary, the mother's, lines, and somebody takes the lines of Peter, and somebody takes the lines of Jesus or whatever. and you're not even reading like the Bible. It's more like a poetic or kind of like skit written based off of it, and they're kind of reading it because it's like, okay, this is a story about, you know, the women at the tomb, or this is a story about Jesus at the Passover. I guess there's some kind of debate about the Passover, but Jesus, some debate about Jesus at the Passover before his crucifixion. Not all the gospels say that, but let's just say, for the sake of the ones that do, Jesus at the Jesus before crucifixion at the Passover with his disciples. Maybe the whole reenactment is about that. But it's not like people even like dressed in the clothing, or, you know, there's no real like props hardly. It would just be like a simple skit, but theirs is long. It's like 40 minutes. I don't know how many minutes long this was. It was long. To me, it was long. I don't know if it was 40 minutes, but it was kind of long. But just watching it, and having someone like Richard Lorenzo Jr., who I don't know anything about him, I'm just kind of listening to him talk. He talks for like 50 something minutes before he even played the video, so there's a lot to listen to him talking. And to me, he kind of seems to kind of have that typical Christian viewpoint about everything. Like, the stuff he says isn't something unique that I'm like, oh, like, now I'm kind of like wondering what he's saying from like a Christian perspective. Like, I just kind of expected him to say everything he said. If it's something kind of like against Freemasons, I kind of already knew what a Christian perspective would probably not like, and he pretty much mentioned all those things. But then, you know, the usual starts where somebody's calling things witchcraft and satanic. That's the part where I'm a little... Okay, so based on this one ritual, is it satanic or witchcraft? I don't know. I don't know what their purpose is of doing this reenactment or this... It's not even called a skit, but that's the easiest thing for me to compare it to, is like a skit. Like, they're not like acting and like trying to be like funny actors or whatever. Like, they're just kind of saying things like matter of fact to say the words with emotion, but and like conviction, but they're not... it's not like a skit where people are like rehearsing lines and like going from one point of the stage to another. Like, it seems like they know what to do, but it's not like entertaining. I'll put it that way. It's not entertaining. You can tell it's a ritual. Now, I don't come from a church that has that many rituals. I would say we have some kind of traditions. The not eating certain types of meats, from how I was raised in that church, not eating certain types of meats, keeping the Sabbath holy, Friday sundown to Saturday sundown, overall, I'd say keeping the Ten Commandments. As far as things done in the church, okay, I could say communion would be one ritual. Foot washing would be one ritual where people will volunteer if they want to wash each other's feet in a basin of water, and then they dry them off with a towel. That does happen. It's very awkward, and they split up the rooms, men, women, or couples. And it's kind of like a... like a... It's like a humility kind of symbol. Because it is like kind of a demeaning kind of act that you're volunteering to do for somebody. I always used to hate it when people would ask me because I didn't like doing it, and it always felt rude to decline. So it's like you're kind of just like stuck with like either I say yes and I really don't want to do this, or I say no and then I feel like a jerk. So there was that kind of ritual. And then there's just stuff that happens during the service, like sometimes you kneel, sometimes you sing the doxology, stuff like that. But there wasn't a lot of, other than like what the bulletin says timeline wise of who goes on the stage when and what their role is when they're up there, there's not a lot of like rituals, not like in the Catholic Church or something, you know, where somebody's coming and they're bringing incense and these certain people sit here or there on the stage and, you know, somebody rings this bell and somebody does this with their hands, or, and then the other people in the congregation do these or those things. Like, there's really not a lot of that. It's kind of more flexible. This whole thing that I was watching is, the whole ritual was definitely a ritual. It was like a whole ritual. I don't know of any Christian churches that do like a whole entire ritual like this. And it was lengthy. I don't even know if I watched the whole thing. I think I did. Yeah, I think I did. Because then the main guy, Richard Lorenzo Jr., he started showing those like healing videos of healing Freemasons from demons. And you know, some guy like falls on the floor and he's like kind of growling sounding, or like and that's their example of the demon releasing from him. And I mean, I don't know these people's stories. I think that people can get demons from anything. Even Christianity, I think people can get demons from that. So I do think it might depend. I don't know if it depends on someone's heart and their mindset, but I want to say maybe, but I don't really know. I don't think I have enough information to really know. Like, there was nothing that I saw in the ritual that I could observe that was like non-biblical. Like, it just seemed like people performing a skit of a type to maybe represent, I don't know, like a promise or an oath. It seems to me, in my interpretation, that the person who's pretending to get killed and put into a pretend grave and then resurrected from that pretend grave, that person, because at the beginning, the ritual has the guy saying, like, you know, tell me the secrets or something. And then the guy who eventually gets fake killed keeps saying, like, I'm not going to tell you the secrets. And so it's like, almost, to me, it seems like they're almost representing, like, this is a representation that you'd rather die than tell the secrets. And then there's some overlapping stuff that I need to look at in detail, but it seems like some of the Masonic handshakes match up with at least one of them that I think I recognized from the Mormon Temple exposed videos. And then another one where I thought I saw the guy who was dressed up as who I'm assuming is King Solomon. The guy who does the I'll slip my throat kind of with my hand, like a hand gesture of like slip my throat. And I don't know if they had the symbol of like gutting yourself. I couldn't really see. But I did see the that cut throat kind of action that he did with his hand to himself. Kind of like how in the Mormon temple they used to do. I don't know, I don't think they all do it anymore, but at least some of them used to do this symbol of like with your hand, like I'll cut my throat and disembowel myself if I reveal the secrets of the temple. And that's kind of the hand motions. They're not actually doing this. I don't think they really believe that they're gonna do that. I've never heard of that being like a problem. Not that specifically. I mean, I've heard about a lot of LGBT people having a lot of difficulty in the Mormon congregations, but I've never heard of that motion of like, you know, if you tell the secrets and doing those motions. I've never heard of that being anything, but people may be feeling like it's like feeling weird about it, but I've never heard anything else about it. That it like causes actual like people to like consider doing that or anything. I hope it wouldn't, but and these rituals that they're doing here, the guy who's pretending, see, I can't tell if this is a practice or if it's like a legit video, because they're not wearing like uniform clothing, and maybe they don't wear uniform clothing, because I don't know. They're mostly wearing slacks and like some button down or button up t-shirt. I think a couple of them have jackets, maybe not even, but shirts tucked into like chinos pretty much, or like a polo shirt. It looks like button downs though, mostly short sleeve or long sleeve button downs or button ups. I don't really see ties. The thumbnail's really small, I can't really see. And then there's two guys dressed up, from what I remember. One was dressed in red, one was dressed in purple, kind of like in these kind of robes. But yeah, after the guy gets yelled at, and he's like, they basically hold a blanket behind him. It's almost like he does like a trust fall into like a sheet or something. And then they symbolize, like, taking him away or something. And they kind of bounce him up and down lightly as they're walking around this temple indoors in that sanctuary-looking area. And they keep just, like, saying stuff. They're, like, reading stuff off paper or, like, marching around for a little bit and, like, walking out the other door. And, like, a couple times they kind of mimicked or yelled as part of the acting, but it just seemed really serious and not really, it definitely didn't seem like a play, and it seemed really serious, but not like something they do every day. They didn't mess it up. It didn't look like it had a lot of flair to it, but they knew what they were doing. And again, they weren't all dressed up in different, like, super extreme looking garb. Like, most of what everyone was wearing was, other than the aprons, you could probably just walk out the building in what most of them were wearing, and nobody would think anything was happening but, like, a business meeting or something. I don't know. It's just, you know, I was definitely expecting to come across, you know, the Christian perspective, and then seeing a video that, if it's real, you know, it's a guy who snuck a camera into showing a ritual that people are not supposed to see if they're not even part of this group. Nobody seems like super emotional, but they do seem happy and close, kind of like willing to help each other and stuff, just from like their interactions. They seem comfortable with each other. The guy who seems like he's going through this ritual, he seems a little younger than most of the people there, or quite a bit younger. He looks like he's in his 20s. Nobody else looks like they're in their 20s or 30s. To me, anyways, from what I can see. But I'm still, you know, okay, so they did use some prayer that said the name of God in it, and it said Amen at the end. And in the middle, it seemed to be about burial or the grave or something along those lines. I really didn't understand it. It wasn't quoting from the Bible. I don't think that was the Bible. I'm pretty sure it wasn't. I didn't recognize any of that. And it was lengthy. I probably would have recognized at least some of it. They've got some other names that they use, like Joshua or something. I don't remember what the names were, but there's two names that sound like Joshua and something else. I don't remember. I'm probably saying it wrong. Like Yahoo or something. Jahoo. I don't know. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I just don't remember. But yeah, other than them mentioning God, saying some kind of really long prayer, which I feel like, I don't know if there's anything specific in that prayer that would be some sacrilegious thing. Nothing stood out, but I also wasn't like paying too deep attention to the wording, because the wording was written. They did captions. The hidden camera person put captions on his video. And then, so they weren't renouncing the name of God. They weren't quoting the Bible. They weren't doing anything that seemed anti-biblical. Not that I could see. I mean, maybe the concept of somebody getting risen from the grave, and by who, I don't know who was supposed to raise him. And I don't know if this is supposed to be some symbolic thing or some literal thing. I don't think they think what they're doing is Bible-based. It's Freemasonry-based. So I feel like I'm taking a far stretch from this ritual to try to see how it would be actually like a satanic ritual. I might be missing a lot, because I'm just like on the surface, because I don't know the deeper meaning. I don't know what they're being taught. I don't know what he did to get to this place where he is doing this ritual. Is it a good thing? Does it get you to a new higher level? Is it a bad thing? I don't really know. Is it some kind of repentance thing? Like, does it sound like it? It sounds to me like it's more of something like he's making some kind of oath not to share certain secrets. And I mean, if it's a club or fraternity, they're gonna have something like that. That's not too out of the norm. If I take my conspiracy theory hat off, that doesn't seem too obvious to me that it's something evil that they're doing. Now, is it attached to something evil, or is it attached, you know, is something else evil about it before or after the fact? I don't know. I really don't know. I still don't know hardly anything. So I guess I'd like to know what it is that he saw that was so concerning. Why he was calling it like an evil witchcraft. I mean, I don't really even know. Like, I think even if I went to a church, there was a Christian church that was doing a lot of rituals, I'd probably be concerned, because, like I said, I wasn't raised around a whole lot of rituals. And so for me to see, like, a ritual that's of this length, I just don't have, like, a framework for it. It almost seems like a play. And I don't know much about that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know, the handshakes are weird. I mean, having, like, secret handshakes or whatever, that's weird. Somebody in the comments, I think it was something else I was watching, but somebody in the comments of a video said that one of their bosses thought they were a Freemason for a while up until a certain point, but then mentioned to this person later that he noticed he wasn't a free, the boss noticed that this worker wasn't a Freemason because a long time ago he'd asked him a certain question that Freemasons would know how to answer, and he didn't answer it correctly. And there were a lot of jokes in the comments, but these handshakes, I don't know if people use them in any other places. I know Freemasons have rings, there's hats, there's all kinds of symbolizing things that shows that you're, you know, a Freemason. But I don't know if I have much more to say about it. That's mostly it. Like, I think, I think it's not too big of a, it's a lot to learn, but I don't really know so far if there's some major red flag that's coming at me that's like, what is this? Like, there's a lot of what is this, but it's not, I mean, it seems like if they're trying to do community service, they're trying to better themselves. I don't see anything wrong with people trying to learn how to move up. But if they're paying into the system, and I mean, it seems to be about, yes, power. Like your own power, I guess, but also benefiting others. Like, other people do get benefited. How? I don't know. Like, I don't know what a specific community service type of thing looks like. But if it's like humanitarian stuff, I mean, that sounds beneficial. If it's just community service within, like, for their own thing, like they're, you know, hosting a bake sale so that they can get stuff, or like uniforms for themselves, or they're, all the money goes back into like everything and they're not helping any other communities, then I don't know. Like, if they're offering like free coaching support to their own people or something, like, that could be something valuable, like life coaches and stuff like that. I really don't know. but it sounds to me like it's almost like that, like life coaches, mentors, I'm not saying people should join it, but it does seem to me, I mean, the first thing that kind of comes to my mind is, you know, if somebody could get motivated into something like that, it could help with a lot of, you know, people who kind of talk themselves out of doing something that's good for them, like making changes that are good for them, or like seeking maybe like a job change, a career change, you know, some kind of different path to see if it works for them better. Like, a lot of times people don't want to make that move, don't want to make that change, or they stay stuck and things aren't working. I feel like something like this, you'd have enough community and support kind of pushing you. Almost like when you're in university, you know, you're not so isolated, you're studying with other people. If you make friends, you're kind of discussing the exams, like, after the fact, and, you know, you're kind of having study groups, and you're, you know, figuring out, not always alone, like, how to get somewhere. And if you're in a cohort, like in grad school, if you're going to be there, like, in a doctoral program for, like, 5 or so years, you're with the same small cohort, you might kind of all be, like, somewhat, you know, getting to know each other, interacting with each other. You might have some overlapping classes, but you're working on your own dissertations, and you have a lot of support. You have a lot of people in your corner. You have a lot of people taking the same path. Kind of same thing as, like, the military. Like, certain things just aren't easy, but when you have a group of people all doing it together, or people in a cohort with you, or people who are, like, you all started at the same level, and you kind of build those bonds through the difficulty of the process and seeing how far you've come together. But if this is, like, longer and it takes years to get to a certain level, I don't know if you'd become demon possessed. I really don't know why people do or how that happens. But I do think people might be better at work, better at school, maybe better at taking care of their health. I don't really know. But it seems like you might learn physical and mental health care, like personal care techniques. It sounds like you learn good social skills, good speaking skills, good listening skills, good empathy skills, good, you know, ego, keeping your ego kind of stable still skills. And people seem to benefit from it, so I don't really know. Like, I don't really know if it is a demon possession thing. I'd like to know why, and if it's not a religion, I'd kind of like to know why. It does still kind of seem like a religion, and I don't know. It's interesting stuff, guys. It's interesting stuff. I'm not going to post that video or any of those videos I just talked about. I talked about the names of them, so they'll all be in this episode. But yeah, I hope the information's helpful. I think I'm still learning a lot. I'll see if I learn any more interesting things. If not, then I don't. If I do, then this is kind of just where I stand with everything. At the moment. You know,